Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com. We do have some hotbeds of conflict around the world. Things are heating up in South America there, Venezuela. Can always rely on the Middle East to provide some, entertainment. I shouldn't put it that way. That seems a little bit cynical. But there's a peace agreement, or at least some kind of agreement on the table between Israel and Hamas. And this has got signatures as well. So this is significant. This is a significant step forward, but really, what's in this plan? And will it have lasting impact? It's time to look at this again, because we are just, we're being led around the world without maybe full understanding. And so we're going to get some of that today with University of Montana professor Miradad Kia. He's one of the region's leading voices on the Middle East and Asian policies. We're going to look at this peace agreement today and just suppose, man, what is the lasting impact of this today on Voices? What do you know about the Middle East? And are we kind of maybe tired of being led around a little bit? Hey, there's peace over here. And you follow that path and it doesn't know. So then we get led around and maybe in a different direction. Let's follow this path to peace. And it seems that it's real hard to find a real good plan that you can stay on, that both parties are going to stay on firmly. And walk out, to resolution of some of these conflicts. Miradad Kia is with us once again, professor, University of Montana. He's the director of the Central and Southwest Asian Studies Center at the University of Montana, one of the leading experts on Middle East. Good morning, professor. I hope you're well. How's school starting? How are things with you?
Good morning, Tom. Thank you very much for your invitation. It's really an honor to be with you. School is busy, as always, and we have wonderful classes, and our students are wonderful, so it's really, as I've always said before, it's really a wonderful opportunity to interact with students from Montana and beyond and share our education and information with them.
Do they have the same concerns? Because they're in academia, you're in a lot of different studies, so to speak. How much for the general population does this resonate with them?
I think that many of them think about these issues, and I think they are well aware that it is far away, but they also realize that it has a direct impact, and not only on prices of gasoline at the pump, but also the fact that we live in a much smaller world than we used to, because we constantly listen and watch each other across the globe. And so whatever happens over there in the Middle East or in Asia, or even in Africa or Latin America, it has a direct impact on them. So they think about it. Some of them discuss these issues with me. And I have to tell you, this generation, unlike some would have argued, is actually a very thoughtful generation. Mm-hmm. They're worried. Mm-hmm. They're worried about what is happening, and that's why they are there in the class, to learn more about it and to feel that they have some basic understanding of what's happening.
And you have such a broad background here as well. And I think we kind of understand this in little pockets of conflict here and there, like the 100-day war or the 7-day war. But everybody in that region, lives this on a day-to-day basis, and it seems to reach into the centuries, right?
Right.
And that's a dynamic that there's no easy handle on that one, I think.
Yeah, and it's Middle East, which means what? Which means that Everybody complains about everything on a daily basis, and it doesn't matter whether you have peace or war. You still have a situation that a lot of people worry about tomorrow. And the reason why they worry about it is that it's really a region that has not seen stability for decades. And the reason for that is very clear to me, at least, because you have governments which, with the exception of one or two, which are very unpopular, and they do not represent the people. And the people have grievances. They, from unemployment to inflation to lack of freedom and basic democratic rights. And I think as they are watching the rest of the world grow, especially they watch United States, they watch Europe, they watch Canada, they watch even Japan and Korea, and they see South Korea. They see growing prosperity and rule of law. They want the same things. They want also a sense of prosperity, jobs for themselves, and education and healthcare for their children, and so on and so forth. And when they don't get it, and all they get is a lot of propaganda and nonsense, there are times that the region erupts in protests and demonstrations. But I think what you mentioned is absolutely correct. This peace agreement, which is really a temporary ceasefire, I think, as of now, Hamas has already violated some of its principles. It's a big turning point, and I think what happened through United States and the leadership of the United States is historic. So I hope that it succeeds. But I have my own doubts, and I have my own sort of skeptical views of this, because some of the folks who signed that document are not as committed to peace as we would have liked. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the dynamic here, too, to understand, is that, according to the Quran, they're allowed in their religion to negotiate in bad faith. And I'm summarizing here. But if they determine that they're at a position, a negative position, so to speak, their morality allows them to lie until they get to a better position, so to speak. And clarify that for me. But, I mean, that, for me, makes negotiations less of a priority in my mind.
Yeah, I think in this case, religion, of course, plays a very important role, but you're dealing with an organization, Hamas, which claims to be, very religious and Islamic and so on and so forth. But I think that's just a show, that's just a mask, basically, to present itself as an organization which respects the teachings of Islam. In reality, I would actually venture to build on what you just say and say they're even beyond any form of Islamic ethics or morality, which means that they have violated every single precept of any religious teaching, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and whatever, because they're very cynical. And they're very cynical, and all they care about is to stay in power at any cost. And cost may be murdering their own people. The cost may be starting a war with Israel and having thousands of their own people die in the process, and they could care less. And I always remember interview, actually it's on YouTube, when a Hamas representative was asked by a European journalist, you received all this money. Of course, they received money from the Islamic regime in Iran to the tune of millions, $150 million a year. And I don't see any hospitals, I don't see any schools, I don't see any roads, I don't see any infrastructure. All you did was build these deep tunnels under the ground so you could stash your guns and arms and missiles so you can attack Israel. What have you done for the people, for the Palestinian people? And with just staring at the camera, the man representing Hamas said, we were not supposed to do anything for Palestinian people. That's for Israel and United Nations and the West to build hospitals or schools or do something for the people. We are here to destroy the Jewish state. So when your ideology is nihilism, is actually destruction of an existing state, namely the state of Israel, anything, as far as they're concerned, is justifiable, even putting their own people at the risk of losing their lives.
And like you had noted that the people... my first question is, and that seems to be pretty evident, how they have abused their authority there, how they have abused people, how they're just a militant group. Why do they still have support? I mean, I know that terrorism is... There are some countries out there that just want to support terrorists. Maybe that's just it. Maybe that's the reason there. But around the world, this terrorist group has had, in my mind, a surprising amount of support. Can we explain that?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. And I have to tell you, first of all, among the Palestinians, there are several reasons. One reason is that they terrorize their own population. So when people go and ask, who do you support, they don't trust to tell you what they really feel or think. They have to say Hamas, otherwise you might not be alive that very afternoon, so that somebody might be hearing them and so on and so forth. Part of it is terror. They have terrorized their own population to submission. Another one, as you mentioned, is religious fanaticism among certain segments of the population. That is, Hamas is an Islamic organization. This is the best we can get, so let's just support it. The other one is that they have also bought, through the money that they have brought from Iran, from the Islamic regime in Iran, or the countries like Qatar in the Persian Gulf, they have basically bought favor and they have bought loyalty. Finally, I think it's very important to not forget that there is also no other alternative. There used to be a Palestinian Authority in the West Bank of the Jordan River, but that Palestinian Authority, despite millions that it received from United States and European countries, it showed such a corrupt and nepotistic face. This is Mahmoud Abbas, who is supposedly the secular side of the Palestinian politics. It was so badly run, and it was so corrupt, that a lot of people who were hoping that more moderate secular Palestinians could do something for them basically defected, and they don't believe in it anymore. So whatever the case may be, I think a combination of different issues has made Hamas still stay in power. But it's also bankruptcy of politics, you know, lack of any democratic alternative. And the result is that the thugs have taken over and they're refusing to give up any power.
Well, but that could end or should end right here, or can end, I guess, right here. With at least this, I've been calling it a peace agreement, but I think I like what you're saying. It's more of a ceasefire than that. But I want to get into it a little bit because there are more steps, and of course, there's been some conflict already, difficulties, and even kind of adhering to the first precepts of this plan, a hostage exchange and a ceasefire. Kind of wrapped up in a peace agreement here. Is it going to hold? We're talking about the Middle East once again, Hamas and Israel, a couple of years into this conflict and plan on the table. And it's been initiated here. It's about a week plus going on. Professor Mehrdad Kia is with us here. He's from the University of Montana to talk more about this, one of the leading experts, not just in our region here, but across the country, the clash of the empires and the rise of the Kurdish proto-nationalism. That's one of those titles that our professor completed, the Ottoman Empire, the Persian Empire, the modern Middle East, authoritarianism, all that stuff, Mehrdad. Thank you for that. I mean, you've been studying this a long time, right? Do we?
Yeah, it's now about 40 years.
Yeah, and the knowledge just keeps building up. And thank you for getting it out there for us too.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's really truly a pleasure. This is one of my favorite programs, and you do such a wonderful job.
Well, I appreciate that. Likewise.
It's always enjoyable to be with you.
And we there's always more to learn about this, and I find that interesting. So in all those 40 years, have you seen a point like this? Have you seen us come to here before? Is there anything in this that makes it stand out? Maybe it's the Hamas's position right now. Last time we chatted, you talked about how the people are getting tired of this. And I think that is a new dynamic that maybe can move things forward here too. But what do you like about this deal, or what do you think about? What's your initial?
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. This is very different. And you are also very correct to say that people are basically sick and tired of violence, mayhem, instability, which has brought, you know, poverty and degradation and just lack of normal life. And think about it. It's a little bit over 2 years ago when Hamas terrorists attacked Israel. They killed hundreds of innocent human beings. They kidnapped, raped, and even decapitated.
You know? Brutally. It was brutal.
Brutal. Yes. It was a brutal attack. And the Hamas leadership sitting in five-star hotels in a country called Qatar in Persian Gulf, they celebrated, you know. And who else celebrated? The leader of Iran, Ali Khamenei, you know, they praised Hamas for attacking Israel and humiliating the Jewish state. Now, 2 years later, basically things have changed. I mean, the table has been turned 180 degrees. All the allies of Iran, the proxies, Hamas being one, but the one in Lebanon, Hezbollah, has been significantly diminished. The Houthis in Yemen have been significantly diminished. These are all the works of Israel, by the way. Credit should go where credit has been earned. And today, Hamas is on the brink of loss of power. But it would not have been possible without the presence and the active participation of the United States. First of all, I think one of the major decisions that was made was that 12 days war against the Islamic regime in Iran, where the United States helped Israel diminish Iran's nuclear capability by attacking some of the nuclear sites. That sent a very, very important message to the rest of the region that the United States is not going to come with troops and landing with hundreds of thousands of Marines, but if we decide to hit targets, because these targets are threatening the security of the region, we will do it. That's one. The second thing, we were pushing both Israel and Hamas to negotiate and exchange prisoners and hostages in the case of Israel, receiving these innocent human beings and bringing them back to their families. And things are going okay when Israel attacked Qatar. Remember, Israel attacked Qatar, that attack was because the leadership of Hamas was staying in this building in Qatar, in Persian Gulf, and Israel targeted it. And of course, that really changed the equation, because the folks in Qatar, the Qatari government, was the middleman negotiating with Hamas on our behalf. And the Qataris were now mad at Israel, of course, mad at the United States. And so President Trump came in and did several things. One, he basically asked Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel to call the leader of Qatar and more or less apologize for what had happened. Prime Minister Netanyahu, though he did not want to do it, he did it because he cares so much about his alliance with the United States and especially President Trump. But even more important, President Trump actually sent his special envoy, Stephen Witkoff, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to the region. And for the first time, he actually gave them the green light to actually negotiate with Hamas directly. Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner went to Egypt and sat across the table with the leadership of Hamas, and they brokered this peace agreement. It took two very intelligent individuals, and it's so interesting. All these years, all these bureaucrats would go to the Middle East. They wouldn't do anything. They wouldn't accomplish anything. Then two real estate guys from New York go to the Middle East, and after several hours of tough negotiations, they hammer out an agreement. Hamas is not fulfilling everything as they promised, and you mentioned that correctly, but at least Hamas got the message that you cannot win this war, and Iran would not be able to finance you permanently for long run, and you need to sit down and somehow put your guns down and talk to us and somehow accept the fact, the reality, that you have to release the Israeli hostages, which they did.
I got a minute and a half here, and that's kind of maybe not fair to kind of ask what's in this plan, but how does it unfold? First it was ceasefire, hostage releases, and then is there a step toward a government authority?
Yes. So the basic, you just stated correctly, first it's a ceasefire. Israel then withdraw, not completely out of Gaza, but they create a zone for Palestinians to return to their homes and start, you know, rebuilding whatever they can. Hamas then releases the hostages, the Israeli hostages. Israel released 2,000 Palestinian prisoners, but Israel refused to release anyone who had a hand on October 7th attack, in the October 7th attack. So it was exchange of basically hostages and prisoners.
Conflict in the Middle East, sustainable peace, what would that require? We're addressing that today here with Professor Mehrdad Kia from the University of Montana. He is the, a professor of history there. And one of the favorites as well. Let's see, I put it, oh, here it is. UM's Distinguished Teacher of the Year in 97, Most Inspirational Teacher in 99, named one of the U.S. Professors of the Year by the Carnegie Foundation as well. And we can tell, Professor, that you love teaching, don't you?
I love teaching, and I love interacting with students, and so many of them have gone places, they have accomplished so much. It's a source of pride for all of us here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that that does warm us up. Because academia is very important to us. It's vital for understanding the right path to our futures.
Many of them came from small towns in Montana. They didn't think their 4 years in Missoula excuse me, would mount into anything, but in the end, they ended up places they could have not imagined, and they have done so much for the country and for their people.
That's good. Do you tell them just to walk it out, to kind of have a plan, but don't overthink it?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And they need to, you know, before anything else, Tom, they need to believe in themselves. And they need to believe in their own country. And they need to know how great this country is. And how much it needs them to serve its interests, its objectives, not only at home but abroad.
Well, and they're searching for the truth, too. And I think that's a reflection on our social media and media in general as well. We've gotten to a point now where it's become untrustable unless you do your own homework on it. I think there's probably good and bad in that, but they're searching for truth now.
Absolutely. And also, I think one of the, you know, we are talking about this Israeli, Hamas conflict. One of the worst things that happened in the last 2 years was the media basically portraying this conflict in a way that so many Americans actually came to the conclusion that it was actually Hamas which was the victim rather than the attacker, rather than the terrorist organization. And slogans on this country's campuses, from river to the sea, and that was a slogan. I'm sure a lot of people did not know, a lot of students did not know, but that's actually a slogan which is calling for the destruction of the state of Israel, which is atrocious, and it smacks of ignorance rather than of knowledge and enlightenment.
Yeah, and that's and again, we're guilty of that. Our mainstream mismedia is guilty of that, and it's up to us to sort through that. What does sustainable peace look like there? I mean, talk more about this plan, can it evolve into something that can have more teeth to it?
Yeah, I think that I think the region now is admitting through this peace agreement that there is a reality on the ground. The reality is there are several million Palestinians. And like all of us on this earth, they also need a normal life. They need an economy. They need infrastructure. They need basic services. They also need to have jobs and a future. And getting behind Hamas and arming yourself and going to kill and get killed is not normal life. It's insanity. And so I think a lot of folks on the ground are realizing this after 2 years of suffering, death, and destruction. But it's going to be tough because of this. Hamas is still the only armed group in Gaza. Now, the neighbors, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Saudis, and here Turkey, which plays an important role, though it's not an Arab country, they have all agreed that a peacekeeping force should replace Hamas. Mm. And then, of course, 200 American officers and special forces will be there on the ground to monitor the transition of power from Hamas to this peacekeeping force. Then once that has been established, then I think construction of Gaza starts with quite a bit of investment. Now, that investment requires billions of dollars of investment by European countries, by Japan, Korea, by United States, of course, Canada, and so on and so forth. That's going to be the tough part of it. Who's going to monitor this construction process? When there is a lot of money like that, there are a lot of people who want to, steal it, basically, to put it bluntly. And who's going to monitor that? It should be, I think, a combination of United States and its allies. The good news is that there is a committee which is to be established, and the President of the United States is leading that committee, which is more reassuring than anything else.
Ken, does there have to be some kind of nuclear disarmament? Or maybe you don't. I mean, there's always been that threat kind of over Israel. I don't know if you can wipe that away completely.
Yeah. I think that the remaining piece of puzzle, as you know, Assad in Syria is gone. Hezbollah, the party of God in Lebanon, is more or less diminished, and so on and so forth. Hamas is now on the brink of giving up power. The only remaining part of this puzzle is the Islamic regime in Iran, with the possibility of developing nuclear capability, which is aimed at the state of Israel. That threat needs to be eliminated as well. And not, as I have mentioned before in your program, not by, you know, sending troops into Iran. It's an impossible task. 90 million people, you know, the capital city of 14 million. It's not doable through those means. So the easiest and the most effective means is the Iranian people, who are, I have to tell you, I'm in contact with Iran almost on a daily basis. I have not seen a more pro-American and anti-their own government people than the Iranians. They're overwhelmingly against this government. There have been a lot of protests recently, strikes, clashes with government forces. And I think we are on the verge of seeing something big coming out of Iran. But it should be led by the Iranians themselves. And we should, of course, support them morally, you know, internationally, even maybe technologically. But they don't need U.S. troops on the ground. They just need us to stand with them. And I think this administration is willing to do that. How it will be done, your answer will be as good as mine. But it has to happen before we have a full, peaceful sort of setting in that region of the world.
What do we look for that indicates right now that maybe it's heading in that direction? Or, you know, in this agreement here, is there a critical, I've seen it, it kind of comes in phases a little bit. Is there a critical phase that tells us something?
The critical phase, Tom, is the total disarmament of Hamas and the arrival of alternative forces, you know, peacekeeping forces in Gaza, and allowing then a cleanup of the area. And of course, the arrival of U.S. representatives on the ground, these 200 that has been promised through the agreement. If we want a full-fledged agreement, it has to be led by the United States, and not militarily, but politically and diplomatically, and in an effective fashion, so Hamas gets the message that they are no longer the boss on the ground.
Does China and Russia have any significant influence in this process?
Always a destructive, you know, impact. Russians are behind the government in Iran, and they actually celebrated Hamas attacking Israel because it diverted the attention from their atrocious invasion in Ukraine. The Chinese are, you know, basically trying to make money here. And whatever situation arises that allows them to make investment, they will be happy with it. They actually have a very good relationship with Israel, but they also want to maintain a good relationship with the Arab world. So China always plays both sides of the divide.
So they're not seeing something here geopolitically. It's mostly an economic opportunity for them.
Yeah, I think for China, it's always the financial and economic side. For Russia, they are trying to maintain some kind of military presence through negotiations with Syria, you know, the new government in Syria. But in effect, the Russians realize that the time for Hamas to go has arrived, The good news is that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Putin have a working relationship, and Russia does not want to alienate Israel. Though it plays both sides of the game and supported Hamas and Iran, it does not want to land on the wrong side of Israel. So I think the Russians will come along eventually.
Turkey?
Turkey was 100% behind Hamas. And yet, the irony of the situation, as you know, is that Turkey is a member of the NATO. So here is an ally who's siding with the enemy. But I think President Trump has managed to bring President Erdogan of Turkey around to the side of at least supporting a peace agreement.
Yeah, I think I've seen that indication as well, and that's good. Any other dynamic here? You got a minute you want to share?
Yeah, I am very, very, very hopeful that something comes out of it. I want to be always optimistic, but I also reserve a sense of skepticism about all this and hope that I'm wrong.
There you go. It's Professor saying openly that he hopes he's wrong once in a while. Yeah. I appreciate your expertise on that as well. And maybe we might come back and also just get more of a history lesson, too.
It's always wonderful speaking to you and your listeners. And it's always an honor to be with you and to spend this time with your listeners.
Well, you're very humble in that. I appreciate that. I've learned a ton, and it's going to help us. So, Professor, have a good session, all right? Very much appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much, as always.
And I hope we have just one more chance and then say, hey, it's all done after this.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.